Hello and welcome back to another episode of Keeping Up Appearances. This week it's just me and Max as we are having a bit of a different episode, similar to how we did on the last international break where we didn't do our normal reviews and that kind of thing because, yeah, I don't think anyone really cares about internationals. But this week, we mentioned it last week. In fact, we're going to focus on the women's game for a change because I think most of the people who we have on, including us two and our guests, we do have an interest in women's football. Some more than others, I'd say. Obviously, Max, who works in there. But yeah, I think we're all interested in women's football. So we're going to do a bit of a women's football focus today. Before we get stuck in, I'm just going to check up on my US team. The US team have adopted. How are you getting on, Max?
What's our mascot?
Is it Roger Williams? Is he just come out? You know?
Yeah, a guy comes out dressed up as Roger Williams. No, we're Hawks. Come on, you gotta remember that. No, we had a good week. We had two wins, both in conference, so we're still top. Had a feisty one at the weekend. We had a player on their team get sent off for hitting out at one of our girls. We had one of our girls tear ACL, which I'm sure we can discuss in this podcast, but it is an epidemic in women's football, tearing ACLs. But it was a feisty game and 1-0 on the weekend. So, yeah, we got 5 games left in conference. One of them's tough, but the rest should be winnable. So, hopefully, we're going to be the number one or number two seed going into playoffs.
So, I think I asked this last week, but are all your conference games before Christmas?
Yeah, the season's done by mid-November completely.
Including the playoffs as well, they're all done.
Yeah, well, yeah, before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's the last Thursday in November, I want to say. So everything is done, men's and women's college football by then. So you have the conference stuff, so your own conference, you'll finish the season by November, then you'll have conference playoffs for the next 2 weeks. If you win that, you go to nationals, so the NCAA National Cup, which then runs for like another 2 weeks, I think. Okay. And then, yeah, get the National Cup final, which we won't do.
So you know those girls then that are in school just to play football? Like, I'm assuming mm-hmm. like a scholarship kind of situation. They don't do anything then until the season picks up again.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, we still practice and we still train. We have a sort of a spring season. Right. It's different each level. Division One, they get like a proper schedule from January through April. For us, we're limited to 28. It's like something like 28 days from January through April of things we can do. So January, February, March, when it's really cold here, we got like one session a week indoors, and then mid to late March into April, we will go to like 3 a week and we'll have a couple of games as well.
Yeah.
But it's not on a record or nothing. And also, you don't have all the fourth-year players, the seniors, because obviously they don't need to do it, so your roster gets cut down by a little bit.
I honestly, like, I think every week I listen to this, I get more fascinated by it. It feels like, do you know those, like, all the films you used to watch when you were younger of, like all these American teams and that in schools, and, like, you live it, don't you? It's mad.
Yeah. It is. It is interesting. I'm sure we'll touch on a bunch of it now.
Yeah.
It's on the boys' side, too. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Right, go on then. Well, if we get stuck in, I think, it's a good place to start, as always. So, the women's football focus came up. I think, in fact, it was a chat about your job, wasn't it, that kind of brought it about. And then, I think this weekend, obviously at home, Max, you won't have felt it, but Everton women played their first ever game at the Hill Dickinson, Everton's new ground, and got like thousands there, which we didn't have like the top tiers, but the lower tiers were pretty packed. Like, again, didn't go to plan, they got beat 4-1, but it's kind of like an indication of like where women's football is in the country, and especially in Liverpool, where our teams amongst the WPL is not great. And like Everton and Liverpool, I think, are like bottom two of the league, couldn't we? So we're not great, but the interest there, which is boss to see. And obviously for any girls I have worked with in the past, the fact that like women's football is now on the rise is a really good thing. So just bringing in a bit of context there. And then first off, I think it might be best, Max, if you go through a little brief summary of your role within women's football from where you've started to where you are now, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I first went to America in 2014. So I just graduated from Liverpool Hope University with a business degree, but I was playing for the uni team. And there was a company called Challenger Sports who would come round and go around the country, visit all the men's soccer teams, to go coach in America in the summer, all these summer camps, which a lot of the lads did, and I only decided to do it in the last year. So I went to America for 6 weeks, I think it was, and coached just on summer camp, stayed with a family whose kid was on the camp, coached Monday to Friday, went out drinking on the Saturday, got sent to the next place on Sunday and did it all again for 6 weeks. So that's how I first got out here. And then I went out for 9 months in 2016. That's when I got my first taste of like actual club soccer in America. And I was doing that for the spring and the autumn. I'd be doing summer camps again. Married my girlfriend, who's my wife, and has been my wife since 2017. And then got a job with Liverpool International Academy. So Liverpool Football Club have international academies all around the world. And they have a lot in the United States. So in Massachusetts, where I am, Rhode Island, rather. And then you've got Jersey, Michigan, Texas, California, Oregon. You've got a bunch. And then you've got ones in all over Europe. They've got them in Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia. So I got a job with them. And then a few years later, became a regional director for them. So I was overseeing the entire region. And then mostly the girls' side. I was doing the boys as well. And then got into the college game as well. So I became an assistant coach at a Division One school, which is called Stonehill College. They're in eastern Massachusetts, so about 20 minutes south of Boston. Worked with them for 3 years. Then I've just joined Roger Williams in the past year, who's a Division Three school nearby to my house. And I've also joined a club called Seacoast United. So I left Liverpool to join Seacoast, who are one of the biggest clubs in New England in this region. Probably like 4,000 kids across all the regions, and I am the girls' director for their South region. So obviously all the top teams, coach a couple of the girls' teams who are U14 and U15, and then obviously got the college gig on the side. So been around the block a little bit in the past 10 years, which is also crazy to say it's been 10 years, but I'm quite well-versed in the women's soccer in America.
So when you say there 10 years, like, I know we've talked about this before, but I'm not you, and I can't believe you've been there 10 years. Isn't that
bad? I know. Yeah.
Oh, like, you've been it's funny. Cracking on with your life in America for 10 years, and we've just been here.
Yeah. It's always funny to like look back, and you, like, you've got a kid now.
I know.
A few of our friends have got kids, everyone's getting married. You know, I got married 8 years ago, getting that green card. I do love her. Yeah, the green card was important.
As long as she's on board, it's fine. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
What I was going to say, though, Max, do you know when you went over for the 9 months?
Yeah.
Was that with girls as well? Or was that boys and girls?
Both. So I was still working for Challenger Sports at the time, and they, if anyone is actually listening and fancies doing this, it's a company I would recommend doing it, and it's great to do it. And it's, you can do it any age. There's guys who are in the 30s doing it. Mostly it was like 18 to 24 year olds. But I got placed with a girls club in a place called Dover, just near Boston. Very, very rich area. I actually had a Celtics player's daughter on my team, Brian Scalabrini's daughter. So I got placed with them. So working mostly with them, but I also work at town programs, which is like, we'll get into more what all the systems like, but it was working with younger boys and younger girls, so from ages 6 to 10 in town programs as well on the side. And then the summer, I'd do all the camps, which was all boys and girls, mixed, co-ed, they play together, they wouldn't be separated. And then back in the autumn again, I was back with the club doing all the town programs again.
So what then, I mean, we might get into it later, but what then guided you towards girls rather than boys? Was it a conscious choice, or did it just happen?
at first it happened, it's just a case of getting placed with the teams, which the directors of clubs decide. So if they feel like you should be with a certain team, they'll put you with them. So I got put with a 2008 boys team, which at the time they would have been U9 or 10. And they're all going to college now, which is also mad. Kids born in 2008. I got put with them, and I was going to put with the 2008 girls at the same time. So I had the two age groups. And I had them for like 4 years maybe, and then I got to a point where I was like, the boys are doing me head in. And it was that case. And also I wasn't as good of a coach with the boys. I think I got too worked up with them and too harsh on them. Whereas with the girls, I was way calmer, which brought out the best coaching in me. And the girls are way more coachable, which you might not think, and especially if you're someone who's listening who doesn't really get involved with women's soccer, but girls are far more coachable than boys. Obviously, boys can do a little bit more, but I found it way better, way more tactically engaging, and then I went full on the girls. So I dropped that team and then took on another couple of teams and became the girls' director, so it was a pretty easy decision. It was a conscious decision.
Yeah, fair enough. I think moving on to my side then, because it's like, I genuinely would love to have the kind of experience you've got of coaching girls, because my only real experience is school footy. Like, obviously, I'm a primary school teacher, so one of the best parts of primary school is footy and like the going through all the age groups. I had a mate of mine who, great coach, he runs his own like Sunday league teams and that. He did all the boys, and I was like, go ahead, I'll take the girls. And I'll be honest, it was never something I'd ever really had been that interested in, girls footy. And then it was a conversation with Tosh, who was kind of like weirdly at the front of like the Wildcats movement. The FA over here were kind of like opening Wildcat centres all around the country as like a way of bringing girls from the local areas into like centralised clubs. And Tosh was at the forefront of it. I don't know how, but like he was having like doing training at like St. George's Park and everything. Like, and it was a couple of conversations with him, and I was like, this sounds great, this. Like, I might give it a go. And he always said the same, girls are more coachable because they want to learn, whereas a lot of lads think they know it all. So
yeah,
you can't teach them anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I took home my girls team. And the first season, they had, like, God bless them, they had all the effort and will in the world, and we just couldn't get points on the board. We had a pretty shocking season. Like, good performances, but just couldn't get points. And in second season, a couple of the year sixes left, got a couple of year fours, fives in, and we absolutely smoked the league. Invincibles. Yeah,
didn't lose. Get a little gold trophy.
I think we only conceded about two all season. We're absolutely unbelievable, and just walked the league. And then, like, unfortunately, I ended up leaving that school that summer, so wasn't able to like capitalize on one of the year group. But my lasting experience is taking girls who had never played before or maybe played in that season with me where we didn't do too well, to bring them on to win the league and see what kind of like push that gave them. It was unbelievable. And I don't think I'd have got that from the boys, because I saw loads of times with footy teams in school, when it's not going well for the boys, they all turn on each other because it's always someone else's fault. And it's infuriating, isn't it? Like, I know to them it's the World Cup, when really it's a friendly against the school next door, but
yeah,
they do turn on each other, where the girls just seem to have a bit more about them.
Isn't that funny though? Like, I think back to when I was in school, like, we had the one girl who played football, and she played with the lads.
Yeah,
that's all she could do, and I was changed. So it obviously came on a bit, but not came on enough.
Yeah. But, well, I think again, this feeds nicely into the next section, because if we were talking about like academy systems and like youth setups for girls and boys, I'm sure. Well, I'm intrigued actually, because I know in the UK there's quite a sparse difference. It's getting small, like the gap's getting smaller, but it's still quite big. What's it like in America? Because even like when I think back to football, men's and women's 15, 20 years ago, US women were dominating, weren't they?
Yep.
Even then. So the US systems must have something in place to make them like that. So from your experience, what are the setups like for young kids in America?
So for young kids, I mean, I think they start a little bit later. That's what I would say. If they do start, they're doing like little, we call them mini kickers, where it's like, you know, you got a coach making them run around and do all fun games and stuff. It's not really structured, but they end up joining programs, maybe U7, U8. But the boys and girls programs are pretty much identical, and the participation is pretty much similar. So it's 50-50. Our club has probably 1,200 kids, and 600 of them are girls, 600 of them are boys. And that's the same for nearly every club in the USA. We've got a lot of teams at the younger age groups, and then as they get older, obviously they fall off, they go into other sports, or they go, you know, they become teenagers, they get other things going on in life, whatever. But the academy systems are very, very good. And the one thing I'd firstly say is there's way more coaches who are licensed at the younger age groups. And it's partly down to the fact that it's pay to play, which will be quite shocking to a lot of people, but everything's pay to play. It's America. It's money. They love the money here. They love spending it. They love making it. So all these academies are pay to play. So the average of ours is about 3,200. Our top teams pay like 3,600 a year. That's boys and girls. And the system is, there's two major leagues in America for girls. One's called the ECNL, so the Elite Clubs National League, and one's called the Girls Academy. Now, they don't actually feed into a professional level, which on the boys' side, it does. So the boys' side, there's the MLS Next, which obviously feeds into the MLS, and then there's MLS Next 2, which is the second tier to that, and there is some other leagues, and that's the thing with America, is that it's pretty wild, wild westish, almost, because there's no real governing body overseeing all these leagues. They're all left to do what they want and grow how they want and make their own rules, which makes it very difficult. But the one thing I will say is that the participation is through the roof for girls soccer because of it. But the end goal is to get to college. It's not to go pro, which is where it differs to England.
Why is that?
Well, there's the first thing is that's the way the system works in America to get to pro level. So the pro level in America is very interesting. So on the women's side, it's the NWSL. There's 14 teams in that. And before COVID, there was only 9. And then there's the USL, which is fairly new on the women's side, which has about 9 teams. So there's not many professional teams, whereas there is about 800 to 900 college programs where you can go and get an education, be part of a professional setup for the most part, get that college education for free, and then hopefully if you're good enough, go play professional. On the men's side, it's the same. There's 800 to 900 colleges, maybe a little bit less on the men's side, to be honest, but the MLS is obviously massive. There's 32 teams in that. You got the USL now, which is getting really prominent. They've got 3 divisions, which is actually promotion relegation, which is why it's actually garnering a lot of fans, because it's going more like the European system. So there's less of a need to go to college for these players, but they still do, and they still end up in those programs. But the best ones typically don't go to college. They'll be in an MLS Next program, join an MLS Next professional team straight away, or go to Europe and go professional like Christian Pulisic did, like many of the American players do. But on the women's side, it's different. They all go to college first. They can then forego their eligibility. So Ali Sentinel, for example, who I've coached against before, years ago, she was playing like 3-4 years up on a team, on a U18 team, when she was like 14. She scored 5 goals and a 6-0 win. And she went to University of North Carolina, got injured, played 1 year, forego her remaining eligibility, and was the number one draft pick in the MLS. I think she went to, I want to say, Portland Thorns, but she's on the US Women's National Team. So there's certainly a path for it. It's just different.
Okay. Would you say then, say like your girls, for example, like, I don't, how many girls have you got on like your current squad?
Which one? Like, the college or the...
I say Roger Williams, for example. How many have you got?
We've got 26.
So say that out of those 26 girls, how many do you think actually really want to turn pro? And how many are not kind of in it just?
Zero.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's the other thing as well. So there's Division 1, 2, and 3 at the college level. If you're playing at Division 3 level, you're probably not a player who's going to go pro.
Okay.
If you're playing at Division 1 level, you are. You have the capabilities of doing it. It's obviously what happens in those 4 years and what level of Division 1 you're at. So there's four power, well, big conferences called the Power Four. That's the ACC, Big Ten, SEC, and the Big 12. And the ACC is like the premier like soccer program one for women's soccer. So that's like UNC, Florida State, who else? Boston College, all these schools where kids do go pro. So if you're in any of those Power Four schools, you've got a massive chance of being a professional soccer player on the women's side anyway. That's the same on the boys' side, but the boys' side varies across the country. It's way deeper at that level. But those kids go to those programs because they're going to go pro, or they're on the top ECNL clubs at a youth level. They're on the top girls' academy programs. They're involved in US setups. That's where those kids will go.
Is it a problem as well that USA is too big? Like, is that a concern for anyone that, like, we think about, like, kids and say, if there's a little girl now playing for Liverpool, say, at 12 years of age, the net of people she's competing against is nowhere near the same, is it? Is that not even worried about over there? Or
not really, because, I mean, ultimately the cream always rises to the top, doesn't it? If you've in these states like Texas, California, Florida, they're the major soccer producing states. It's all year round. These programs are like the money makers. So like these kids that they're in early on and they're in a professional environment a long time.
Yeah.
So you got to almost look at the United States like miniature countries. That's why it's states, really. California, you know, it's massive. Texas is massive. You can fit England into Texas 2.5 times. That's how big it is. Yeah. So, like, if you look at that itself and that environment, then you're looking to produce a few players out of Texas. So there's not really a worry. It just increases the competition. The problem is not having real governance over the leagues. Because they're a business, they only care about winning rather than development. So it's honestly the reason why USA might be struggling at the moment, is that the main and one focus isn't development. It's a business. They need to win. They need to make money. So the kids are playing a certain way that win games and not playing a way that will develop them. And then you see that on the national scale. Why?
Yeah.
It's the reason why Spain's so good and better than the United States right now.
Okay. That makes sense, to be fair. Because I was going to bring it back to like the UK kind of setups, because don't get me wrong, I've come into this podcast not as an expert by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
There's way more people who know way more than me. I'm just kind of a fan who has an interest in it. And obviously I've worked with young girls who do have hopes of kind of playing for academies one day. But the setup in England anyway, I think the way you say those kids aren't going to slip through the net in America is because they're playing competitive football, aren't they, from... They're playing a lot of football and a lot of competitive football from an early age, so
yeah,
they're not going to be missed because lots of coaches looking at them all the time. And I think sometimes that would be my worry for this country is it's the level of coaching, but not through the want of trying for the coaches. I imagine like the coaches who are involved in women's football are very, very passionate about it. There's just no fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like if you look at boys' academies, like I've worked with kids who've been played for Everton in year one, and that's like 5-6 years of age, and they're playing for Everton.
Yeah.
And then there's some academies in England, like Everton, for example. Everton girls don't take girls until they're 11.
Yeah, Liverpool were the same.
Liverpool are younger now, though, aren't they?
Yeah, now they are. Yeah, definitely.
Why? What was the reason behind that? Why is it just funds? They didn't have enough
funds. Yeah, I think. I mean, we're going to touch on it a little bit later, but Liverpool weren't very serious about women's football for a long time, and that's part of the problem. And again, it's like, it's also the coaches not being able to pay coaches, for example, with the funds, because like in America, you can make decent money coaching, and it's because it's pay to play, whereas in England, everything's free, or you know, maybe paying subs every week. But it's finding the people who want to do that, because it's almost volunteer work for the longest time. And then you've got to manage that. Like when we went to visit the academy at Liverpool on the boys' side, they would explain to us, you know, like we have a budget every year of like 1.2 million, for example. If you sell a player who came from the academy, you're getting that back and funding the academy for many years to come.
How does that work? Yeah.
Whereas it doesn't work like that for the women's side, obviously.
Yeah.
Olivia Smith, who was a Liverpool player, she came from Canada. She played for Penn State, which is one of the big schools out here. She's just became the first £1 million player in women's football. She got sold by Liverpool to, I think, Arsenal. Yeah. But that money's not like, it's not reinvested in the academy, because she didn't come from the academy. So it depends on what they do with that. But yeah, it's a bit wild, but it ultimately comes down to how serious these clubs are about the women's game. And that's what's going to really grow it, is if they can budget it into the main club's budget.
Yeah, well, from what I know, it's like, obviously, if you've got a boys' academy, so say, again, Liverpool, for example, Liverpool fund and the Premier League fund their academies, don't they? The boys' side.
Yeah.
The FA fund the girls' side. Is that right?
Maybe.
From what I think, it might be that. Because before there was the ETCs, which is the current kind of what they call an academy, because they don't want to call it an academy. They would call it regional talent centres or something like that. And it was basically the FA trying to kind of funnel girls towards the national team. There was no kind of care given for clubs, because obviously the clubs weren't a big thing then. So it was all about, we've got to get girls ready for the national team. So this regional talent centre would cover, say, I don't know, Merseyside and whatever. They've got to pick a couple of players from there to put straight into the England system, as in, and they would be trained by FA coaches. And it's kind of like you're bypassing all of the clubs in that straight away. But then now you kind of, the clubs do have a bit more ownership. But as I said, the issue is not only they don't play very often, I think they probably train maybe 2-3 times a week. I currently work with a girl who plays for Liverpool. She's 10 years of age. She plays twice a week, maybe once or twice a week with Liverpool. But then to get extra training from Liverpool coaches, they have to fund it. Now, the family have to fund it themselves. Now, obviously, you said it in America, that's kind of part and parcel of that world, is you've got to pay for it if you want to play. But over here, it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think for the boys, it's not. The boy, like, if you play for Everton or Liverpool Academy, you're training 4 or 5 times a week, Everton paid. You're having trips all over the world, Everton paid. Your family come, Everton paid. It's like, and you won't, like, I mean, we won't go too much into the men's game, but you look at now, like, these academy kids who come through into the first team. And obviously, they are very entitled and they think they've made it. And you just, obviously, you can't blame them, can you, when they've had the world on a plate since the age of 5. And then you've got girls who are grafting, really trying to, like, find their way in this world of trying to get breakthrough into football, but there just seems to be barriers all the time. And I get that it's changing, and I do feel like there is a big change coming with, like, the WSL now, potentially the biggest league in the world, the biggest club league in the world. But as you say, it's how long is it going to be before that feeds down? Because the current generations who are swept up in England winning the Euros and stuff, they're probably going to miss the boat, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, and for sure.
They'll be adults by the time there's an academy for a 5-year-old.
Well, if you also look at, like, the academies for the boys' side, it's like the participation levels are massive, so, like, they can have the academy and just get whoever they want, whereas the levels are growing for the girls' side, but it's not huge. Like, the catchment areas need to be bigger. But then one thing they're going to have to really think about is... It's a struggle with PSR and how it all connects. But, like, for Everton, for example, obviously they had the issues with PSR, but their budget for the women's program needs to be completely separate. And it's almost like, you know, Chelsea sold their women's team technically, yeah, and it's owned by somebody else. That's probably the way to go, where you're going to have like its own separate thing, yeah, while still being connected to the club, because they still need that real connection to improve attendance figures and get them playing at places like Anfield and the Hill Dickinson. But it's going to take clubs being way more serious about it and accepting the fact that they're not going to make money for a long time, because that's all they all care about is just money. Then they're not going to make it. And that's why Liverpool sold Olivia Smith. Liverpool should be keeping a player like that on the women's side anyway.
Yeah.
They sold it because it's £1 million and it's gonna be funding Liverpool's growth for the next few years, really. I know we had Vicky Jepson do a presentation for us. I think it would have been 2021. I don't know, it's in 2019. When I went to Liverpool, and without sort of saying it, because she was doing a presentation for Liverpool at Anfield, she was saying that Liverpool don't care about the women's team. And
that's very bold, to be fair.
Yeah, and she was doing like this presentation showing us how without saying it. But when I went back the next time, which would have been after COVID, they just put a guy called Russ Fraser in charge, who really did turn it around and showed that they were really invested in the club. Because Liverpool for a long time were a bit of an embarrassment in terms of women's football, because how can you have this team that is so big on the men's side, so renowned across the world, and have the women's team in the second division? So he changed that around. I remember asking him, like, are you planning on signing like any big name players? Because Manchester City just at the time had signed Carly Lloyd, who's one of the USA's best ever players, and she was a massive Liverpool fan. And huge Liverpool fan. And I'm like, are you ever going to sign players like this? And he's like, we want to, we will get to that point, but we need to make sure that the foundation for the team and the club going forward is set up properly to do that. And he did turn around. He's just actually left. Another guy's taken charge, Andy O'Boyle. But Vicky Jepson's now the US women's under 20 coach, which I thought was interesting. And then new manager's Gareth Taylor, who was the manager of Man City for the last 5 years. So they're definitely going in the right direction. But again, it's going to be understanding that you're going to take a loss for a few years or even a while until you start making like real progress towards it. And it happens in Europe. You know, Barcelona had 98,000 at a game. I think it was the El Clasico. Yeah. Atletico Madrid had the same amount sort of up there, full stadium. So it's certainly possible.
Yeah. Just going on that, it just something just come to me. What do you know? Like, as far as like we've got a stereotype in England of being like these like miserable old men who hate women's footy. And like, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of like young people that hate women's footy as well. Is it well respected in America?
Yeah, immensely.
Is it?
I think if you think of American sport, you'd think athletic first, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, they're very athletic. You know, they got baseball, football, where there's all these big people at the Olympics every year, the number one or number two. So to be athletic and to be in sports is massively encouraged for females or girls at a young age. So they're not just doing soccer, they're doing lacrosse, they're playing tennis, they're doing ice hockey in our region. A lot of the girls play ice hockey with the boys, which is mad. I don't know if you ever watched an ice hockey game, but it is brutal. But it's very encouraged, and it's definitely not frowned upon. And then when it gets to the professional level, they're all massive fans of it. I think the women's national team gets way more support than the men's team. They actually really don't like the men's team, to be honest.
Who? Like the public?
Public.
Don't they know?
No. It's strange. It's just like America is so good at a lot of things, and then the men's team never really have success.
That's true, yeah.
And to Americans, that's like, you know, you suck.
Yeah.
Like, that's how their frame is. It's like, they were at SoFi Stadium, which is a massive new stadium in LA, and the attendance was like 15,000 in a 90,000-seater stadium. That's also, the public are very aware of the fact that the US Soccer Federation are absolutely terrible and don't have a clue about what they're doing. Even hiring Pochettino, it's just a random hire. But on the women's side, obviously, they haven't been as successful as they've always been, but they're just hugely admired. And all these players are heroes to all these girls. And obviously, with hundreds of thousands of kids flying across the country. They're very well admired.
Is that likely? Or maybe it might not change by then, but do you think there'll be a big campaign to change that before the World Cup?
For the men?
Yeah.
I think so. There's already a push to move college soccer to year round. So as I said, right now it's for Division One, they, you know, they report on July 31st, August 1st, and then they play until mid November. That's the season done. So the men's college game is changed into a year round program. And I think it might be next year or in a few years anyway. And they want it to be more of a feeder system into the professional game. So there's already that push happening. For the actual national team itself, they're going to be supported because America are very patriotic and stuff, but it's going to take a while before you see like any real change at that level.
Yeah. Well, because I think, again, that's probably where we differ, isn't it? Because, I mean, the men's team, obviously, is. I find like the men's team in England is very divisive because you've got like your Scouts Not English brigade who hate England. You've just got general people who just don't really care, and you've got the people who are like absolutely obsess over it and travel like home and away. With the women, again, though, coming into the now, like England coming off the back of 2 Euros wins, it's actually lovely, you know, to see how everyone gets behind the women. And
yeah,
I mean, don't get me wrong, they've been quick to bring them down again. Like Chloe Kelly's just been absolutely, like, terrorised ever since she won the Euros for England, but she kind of part and parcel of the game, innit? But the whole country kind of comes together to celebrate what they do. And then you do kind of want them to, like, capitalise on it and go, like, what are we going to do now then? Because you've got, yeah. I think I imagine, well, after the 2022 Euros, the kind of, like, upturning in women's footy was mad, as I said, like those Wildcats centres started. I mean, they were going before COVID, but afterwards as well, it was like a big push. They were kind of popping up here, there, and everywhere with loads, like thousands of girls wanting to get involved in footy. And then, as you said before, about it being voluntary, the coaches that are coaching them are the likes of Tosh, who I don't mean that. That's definitely not a diss at Tosh. Tosh knows he's my favourite person in the world, and he's. What he doesn't know about football isn't worth knowing, but he's also got a job. Do you know what I mean? He's got a full-time job that is his priority, and if he can coach for an hour, that's great, but it's not going to get you where you want to get. And it's like, they might turn up to a Wildcat session or any kind of session after that and be like, that's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be as magic as when they won the Euros, and it's not. And then you lose.
No, it's not.
You kind of need to capitalise on it and be ready. And don't get me wrong, England, I don't feel they were as confident going into this Euros because, we went in favourites to the home one, obviously. Then the last one, we lost a couple of players. Millie Bright wasn't playing. Kind of went into that where we weren't going in as favourites. It was a bit of a surprise, but you wonder if in the next World Cup or the next Euros, are we going to win it? Probably not. The magic that we've just had, you just don't want to lose it. Do you know what I mean? And I think the WSL clubs are doing everything they can to get girls in. Like Everton, like I can speak for Everton more than Liverpool because I don't keep an eye on them, but Everton really pushed the women. Obviously, they've now got Goodison Park, which there can't be a women's team in the country that's got a more like historic, legendary ground than that. And then they're also playing games at the brand new Spanking Stadium. So it's like they are trying, but yeah, I just... Moving forward, one of my next questions is going to be like, where do you see the game in like 5 years' time? And with the current state of the game, where do you think it will go, or where would you like it to go?
I'd love it if it's funny because I want to say like I love it if the UK was more like America in terms of the amount of kids that are playing and the seriousness behind it. But we could be sitting here next year saying that the US women's national team don't do very well again and get beat, which is very weird to think about. But, you know, the reason why it's so big in America, it started so long. There's such an early investment from the government, first of all. Like, I think Title IX, for anyone that doesn't know, Title IX was this government-mandated law that basically said there couldn't be any discrimination against sex in terms of sport. So every time there was a college sport added to a college, they had to add a female sport. So that means from then on, like, there was a massive investment in women's football and all sports and women on the women's side. So, like, there needs to be push from the government to say, like, this is where we want to go in the future in terms of in 20 years' time, we want this much investment. You know, it's I wouldn't be coaching football in England if I lived there. Whereas here, I've got a full-time job coaching football. And that's because there's money in the sports. And obviously, granted, it's pay to play, but, you know, there's unbelievable facilities everywhere. Everyone plays on a state-of-the-art turf field. All the leagues, there's just the amount of staff that are involved in the sport. You know, we're a company that makes millions of dollars every year from football. So that gets reinvested into the program. We're all non-profit. So we make all this money. We have to spend it. So I want it to get that way, but it's going to be so difficult. It's going to have to, like I said, it's going to take clubs saying, we've got this much money every year, and it's going to take the FA saying, you have to spend the same amount of your budget on coaching staff and youth at women and men's football to then pay the people like Tosh to say, don't be a maths teacher anymore, be a full-time coach, because that's the difference. You've got so many people that want to do it. Like, we have part-time staff that have a full-time job, but they're mostly parents who just do it on the side, whereas then there's a lot of us that are full-time staff and get to make a living out of it. That's where it sort of has to start. Then you'll get engagement from above, and then the kids will come anyway. And as the sport continues to grow, because the teams are doing so successful, the teams are very successful, you'll then get the buy-in from everyone. But there's still so many barriers. Like, you know, it's fantastic that Everton are using Goodison Park. But if you look at Liverpool, you know for a fact there's people at Liverpool saying, we don't want that team playing at Anfield because we want the pitch to be perfect for the men's team. Yeah. So there's stuff like that that will continue to be in the way until they all get very serious and pushed almost by the FA and the government.
Yeah, I agree. I think, it's one of them. I've loved this chat. I feel like I've learned loads, but also it is quite nice to talk about the women's game a little bit, because even, like, with all due respect, and this is on us as much as anyone, when you go to the pub with your mates, you talk about the Premier League, don't you? Like, yeah. Well, unless maybe you've been to a women's game, you go, that was good one, we went to Goodison, but you're not really sitting there going, it's the Champions League tonight, and you go, oh yeah, who are Liverpool playing? You go, oh no, Chelsea women are playing, even though Chelsea women last year in the Champions League were unbelievable. Like, I think I enjoyed them more than watching them more than most of the men's teams.
Yeah, so Arsenal won it, didn't they, as well? Yeah. Arsenal won the Champions League.
Well, it's about Chelsea, but it's like, I feel like it's everyone's job, I suppose, as well, to bring that into everyday conversation, isn't it? And talk about it more, especially with young girls and stuff, and make it a thing where it's not just, when there's no men's footy, we're all going to watch the women. Because that's what it was at the weekend at the Hale Dickinson. It was international break, there's no Everton, let's go and watch the women. And you kind of needed it. And obviously you're not going to get men giving up the season tickets to go and watch the women, but if the kind of attitudes to it and the conversations can change, it just is viewed in a much more positive light, I would say.
Yeah, it's generational as well. You got this entire generation growing up, boys and girls, who've seen the US, the England's national team be way more successful on the women's side than the men's side. So it's going to take time, but certainly for like our generation and younger, you've seen like a professional side. So whereas anyone that's older than us is going back to like the 90s when, like what you said, where it's just like these women somehow play and end up on like an English team and like it's not really sought after or whatever. I think from my point of view, every time I watch like a high level women's game, especially in the college game, it is amazing to watch. It's as good as the men's side. The men's side is just quicker.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference. It's just quicker, but the girls still do the same stuff. They can still hit the ball the same way. Like, I think, you know, the advantages to Europe and England and Spain as well, in terms of why they've caught up and almost went ahead of the Americans, is that they watch football and they're part of a culture where football is number one.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas women over here, and even on the Division One team that I was a coach of, they don't watch it. And they're not brought up in households that favour it, apart from the kids who are like European descent. So like we had this Portuguese kid on well, a family's from Portugal, brought up in a Portuguese household. She's the best player by far, and she does things like a boy would. Like, yeah. She'd watch something and then try and recreate it. And then you got the girls who don't watch it, who could be 10 times the better player, but they just don't get involved that way. So it's very interesting, but I'm excited for like how it's going to grow in England, especially. It's already massive here, and it's amazing to be a part of. But there's still a lot of flaws to it that need to improve, and that's why you're seeing the women's team struggle at the high level. The Spanish are the best, the English are great, but I think one of the questions we were going to talk about is the need to go to America. Like, Alessia Russo still went to Alessia. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to cut that bit out because I'm going to look like an idiot. Alessia Russo still went to UNC in America for a year. And there's players that will still want to go to America from Europe. And Van Matti, I think she did go to America, but I know she was going to go to Boston College and never went. I think she did end up there. But they're still all going to America to play in college for a year or two, which is actually, from a club perspective, they don't want them to anymore because the club environment's a better environment for coaching and learning now than the college environment for most players. Well,
are they going to America whilst playing for clubs?
Yeah, they let them go. So I know we had a conversation with, I think it would have been Vicky Jepson, I think around, it would have been Neve Charles maybe, when she was at Liverpool. She's at Chelsea now, right? She wanted to go to America, and they had another player who went. And because she was living by herself in a dorm, she wasn't like eating the right stuff and preparing the right way, because it's on yourself a lot.
Yeah.
So they couldn't look after her, and that's not what the head coach at these schools are doing. So like, she came back and she was worse off for it. So I think Alessia Russo was there for a few years and she won a national championship, where at UNC is the best program by far, but not everyone's going to go to UNC. So the kids still do it, but the clubs let them go, because it's only 3-4 months.
So, but why do they want to go? What's the benefit? Is it just to kind of get the experience of the college football, because it's so good and you just want to be a part of it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you got to remember, not every 18-year-old, 19-year-old is playing for the first team straight away. It's the same on the men's side, isn't it? So if you can get to go and play at that level
regularly, yeah,
it's a better like youth level than a reserve level. Yeah. Like, if you've got Liverpool Academy on the 21s, like, you'd rather go off and play in a competitive environment and almost get loaned out to a team rather than playing on the 21s, where it's just not the same.
Yeah.
So there's still that need for it. And it is brilliant to watch when you watch UNC are terrible this year, actually, but when you watch like Stanford, Florida State, all these clubs, it's just all these schools, it is such good football. Well, to a certain extent,
yeah.
The style.
Right, I think we'll wrap it up there then, Max. I think we've covered everything we need to cover and a bit more. So, yeah, thanks for teaching me all about the US systems, and yeah, just scratching the itch of women's football. It's something I hope we can kind of talk about more, even on here. We should be bringing it up a bit more, do a little women's football section. If something happens or we go to a game or something, we should bring it up. I know you do with your school, but
yeah
let's be the front runners of that rather than telling everyone else to do it.
Yeah, hopefully everyone's now a Roger Williams Hawk fan. If not, you should be able to go find like some of the bigger schools on YouTube, television, all the highlights posted. ESPN are massive.
Are your game
over
YouTube?
Here. Our game should be. Actually, I haven't even checked. I get a few something else, but all the games from like Division 1 for certain, they're everywhere. You can find them. ESPN are massive. They're a huge sponsor of women's college soccer. All those big Power 4 schools you'll find on ESPN. So you can go online, find them. YouTube, definitely highlights. Even if you don't want to pick Roger Williams, go pick a big ACC school and you'll definitely watch some good football.
No,
if you see some future superstars.
We all need to pick Roger Williams. I'm a Roger Williams fan until you go somewhere else, and then I'll lose to them as well.
Hey, one of our kids scored a 40-yard free kick at the weekend. I have to post it to the Keep Up Appearances channel so everyone can see it.
Where can you see that? Have you just got the footage?
I've got the footage, yeah. I'll send you it.
That's boss, yeah. Right, go on. We'll move on then, and we'll move unfortunately, we'll move back to the men's game, and we are going to do something we haven't done in a few weeks. We're going to do some Super Six. Now, normally we have a guest, and normally I would have the league table, but I don't have it to hand. So what we'll do, we'll ask Max to do his predictions for this week, and then we'll add it to the averages for the next few. So this weekend's games are as follows. Match number one, Max, is Man City Everton.
Oh, wow. Jack Grealish can't play, can he?
He can't, no.
That's major for you, though.
Very big, I didn't thought that.
TNO Barry's going to start left wing.
Oh, God. Have you seen anyone?
No.
You don't want
I just hear your reaction every time you talk about him. It's enough for me. I don't want to waste 30 seconds of your life finding a clip. I think I saw something somewhere that Haaland's... Has he scored every game so far?
I'm not sure, but he's scored for fun, isn't he? So.
He is, isn't he? And I think... I think Man City are going to win. I'm going to go... How many points did they get last week, do you know? Last time? Two again?
Nothing's a hand. Sorry, probably two again.
2-0. Yeah. Man City.
I'd be honest, I was going to say 2-0. I think any more might be a bit unfair on us because we are all right at the back.
Exactly, yeah.
Next up is Brighton Newcastle.
Oh my God, I have no idea. I'm going to say... Well, I'll put Walter Marder in my team and he scored. So I want to continue that trend. He's going to score. 1-1.
Not.
Don't know why.
Right. Game number three is Crystal Palace at home to Bournemouth.
Crystal Palace's unbeaten streak was torn down by the Ev.
It was, yeah. By the Toffees.
Yeah. Bournemouth are really looking really good lately, though. So
will Palace, though, you know.
This is a tough one. I know. It's the thing. They both look really good. It's going to be like can it be a really tight game where it's like 0-0 or like something like 3-2? This is probably why I'm getting like 2 a week. I'm terrible at this. 3-2. Palace.
Okay. I'll be honest, I don't think these are too wild up to now. We've got Fulham Arsenal.
Fulham, nothing club.
Do you like them, yeah?
I was looking at all the comments on the TikTok and like obviously all the Liverpool stuff gets like everyone bites very quickly. Yeah. There's just one comment on like the Fulham one. Remember Fulham fans saying this is why no one likes big six fans.
Oh yeah, something
like that. Isn't it?
Yeah, honestly, I can't stress enough. Like for a little podcast like us, don't take offence, Max, but slagging Liverpool off gets you views. That's simple.
It does. Arsenal 2-0.
Right, go on then. Tottenham Villa. I could go either way, I feel like, that one.
Yeah. I still fancy Spurs, though. They're just the better team now, aren't they, under Thomas Frank?
Yeah.
Not playing super high line and crazy every week. 2-1 Spurs.
Right, and the last one, Liverpool United.
I'm going to go for a Liverpool win, but we've got to turn it around, right?
I mean,
against them.
If there's ever a game to, like, when some people are obviously being a bit hyperbolic saying Liverpool are in crisis and all sorts, obviously they're not. But a loss against United would put them in serious trouble.
It would.
Really, like, psychologically, that'd kill you, wouldn't it?
Especially considering, like, it's not even just an all-Man United side. They're terrible.
Exactly.
All the talk is about Ruben Amorim getting him sacked. And, like, to lose against them would be very, very bad. very bad. But it could also be a game where we just like score loads. I don't know. I'm really interested to see how he starts and like who he plays. Everyone's had like a good international break. Isak scored. Ekatike played for France for the first time, maybe. I think it was the first call up. Even the likes of Kirk has had a good week, who I absolutely slated. But if he can't start him, he has to start Robertson. He's got to. I'm going to go 2-0 Liverpool.
Yeah, I think that's fair, to be fair. But yeah, it's one of them. I can only see a Liverpool win, but I can only see a Liverpool win for all the other games as well. That's not even, again, we've said this a million times, it's not even based on performance, is it? It's based on Liverpool. That's all you think. Like, equally at the same time, it should be based on United and what we know about United, and is that they are terrible. So,
if he plays, if it's funny because if he plays that formation, he's going 1v1 against probably Salah, Isak, and Ekatike. Yeah. Just that alone should be enough to like get Liverpool over the line. Like when we talked a few weeks ago, I think it was the Manchester Derby, I wanted to bring up the fact that I think Luke Shaw is a very overrated footballer. He got absolutely destroyed by Doku and Haaland. And every time he plays around field against Salah, he gets absolutely murdered. So if he's on that left side and you're leaving Salah all alone, like it could, I always think it could be like 5-0. Because of the games we played in last years where it has been 5-0 and 7-0. But we will see.
Yeah, we'll see. Right, before we move on then, Max, just check, have you got time for the closing question?
I do.
Okay, right. Do you mind if I throw one in?
Yeah.
I've had this question for a couple of weeks now, but obviously we had a couple of cancelled episodes because it's not as relevant as it was. But seeing as we're talking about the US and stuff, I still think it works. I was wondering if you think there's any kind of like chance that a Ryder Cup style football event could ever happen, as in like continental teams. And if so, who do you think currently would win?
Wow. That's such a good question. I think no, it won't happen. And it wouldn't happen because, number one, there's too many games already.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the Ryder Cup works because they're all so into it.
Yeah.
Whereas these would treat it like a friendly, like it is. Or like, remember those games where it was like, they don't really happen now. They only happen with legends. But like, remember like it was like Ronaldo and friends versus some of Zidane and friends.
Yeah.
And like, but that was like when the players were still playing. These charity games. Now it's just always legend games. If it was very serious, I think it'd be amazing. I always thought it'd be amazing if you did like a North East South in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think the reason it would never happen, because obviously golf's an individual sport, isn't it? So it's easier to fit into a team. But like, if you think about what like all like Rio Ferdinand and Steven Gerrard always say about like England was, they hate the other clubs too much. So, like, Gerrard would never sit with Rio Ferdinand at the table, and they'd never, neither of them would sit with John Terry. And it's like, if you threw, like, I don't know, Salah and Jack Grealish, maybe not to that extent, but that Everton-Liverpool rivalry becomes a problem, doesn't it, if you did, like, a North East South. Likewise, if it's continental, I'm not sure it would gel as much. However, the idea behind it would be unbelievable. Go on, what were you going to say?
Can you imagine if someone got injured doing it, though?
I know. Yeah, it'd be murder, wouldn't it?
It'd be murder. Like, I can't believe you got injured in that stupid game.
I mean, you can say that about the Nations League, though. The Nations League is all the nonsense. But,
yeah. But you could go into training, though, and, like, I don't know, like, Van Dijk absolutely nails Haaland in North training.
True. Yeah, and then it'd kick off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or some snack. Like, you can imagine a Jose Mourinho saying to somebody like Frank Lampard back in the day, or it was John Terry, you make sure you go absolutely kill him, please. He would.
Yeah, he would, to be fair. Because in my head, I'm picturing like soccer aid, you know, where a week of training and there's loads of like behind the scenes stuff at the mall. And then you'd have like a tournament over the course of a weekend. I think it'd be so good.
Who would win? Europe? I think they'd have to win, right? Would it be Europe against like South America,
yeah,
probably?
Yeah, it'd be continental, yeah.
Europe would probably have to win, wouldn't they? Because Dembele is the Ballon d'Or winner, Rodri last year.
Yeah.
Mbappe. Van Dijk, centre back.
Haaland.
Haaland. There's just too many. Brazil aren't Brazil of years ago.
That's mad, isn't it?
Argentina.
It's like if you went back a couple of years, it probably would be the South Americans that are winning. Like if you went to Brazil and you're Argentina and like Uruguay, for example, they probably would absolutely smoke it. But then it's moved on now, hasn't it? And I think Uruguay probably is like the powerhouse. So.
Yeah.
But
it goes back to like, you know, when you were a kid in school and you like just write down like the best 11. Like, how many of them would be South Americans now? Probably not many.
No, I don't think there would be at all. Yeah, if you're listening, do that. Pretend you're looking at biology and you just you get a report. I agree. I think it probably would be all. It's one.
And then go tell Mr. Tosh what your team was.
It's worth considering anyway. FA, UEFA, anyone, FIFA, don't do it. All right, we will leave it there. I think, we've had a good one there, Max. And we'll be back to normal next week, but hopefully we'll sprinkle in a little bit of women's football as and where we can. So, as always, thank you, Max, for joining me.
Thank you.
And, everyone, follow the socials. Like, share, do what you can. Comment on our videos, even if you think they're a bit rubbish. Just comment on them for us. It really helps us. And until next week, Max.
Thanks.
It's been a blast.
Oh, God. See you next week.